Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us again for another Basic Conversation. And Father Basic, we are finishing up our season on looking at the impact of and legacy of Pope Francis. We've had numerous kind of topics, and for this final one, we're going to talk about and reflect on Pope Francis and peacemaking.
I like that. I like him. I like talking about him. He's one of my favorites for sure.
How do you want to enter into this important?
That's a good question. I feel like I need to do a little bit of background on Francis, Pope Francis. He chose the name Francis of Assisi, and he followed through with him. You know, Francis of Assisi was tried to stop the war between the Crusaders and the Muslims, traveled and went across the lines and talked to the Sultan and tried to broker a peace thing. So it's one of the many reasons that Francis liked Francis of Assisi, who incidentally is a 13th century figure. I think he died around 1225. So within 50 years of one another, two of the greatest saints in our Catholic tradition, that would be Francis of Assisi, and 50 years later, died in 1274, as Thomas Aquinas. So trying to just give a little historical context on where we're at here. So Francis of Assisi was a great peacemaker, among many other things. And he wrote the encyclical that we're going to look at is called Fratelli Tutti. That means like brothers all. It's a statement that Francis of Assisi, again, when he wanted the attention of his members of his religious order that he followed, Fratelli Tutti, brothers all. Actually, it was a little controversial because some of people thought it was sexist, brothers all, what happened to sisters. So we have to always give him a break for how he dealt with women. You know, as someone said, he sometimes sounded like a elderly Latin American male.
Which he was at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, he was, yeah, right. Anyway, yes, so that's one way of getting into this. I suppose one of the statements that comes out early. Well, let's give back on Fratelli Tutti, okay? So he did that as a result of the pandemic. The pandemic, he felt the world order didn't handle well. Nations didn't collaborate with one another, and therefore the nations weren't in a good position to make peace together. So that's one of the things that motivated him. It was subtitled On Fraternity and Social Friendship, Fratelli Tutti, On Fraternity and Social Friendship. And he said during the pandemic, people, the nations didn't cooperate like they should have. And if that's the case, then they can't cooperate well on doing peacemaking. So that's how he came at that. At that time,
you know, he was obviously right out of the gate when he started as Pope, talking about just stridently against war.
Yes,
and
right early on in his pontificate, made it clear he was going to be a peacemaker, and he was going to challenge nations to make peace. And he was going to speak out against nations when they failed to make peace. And so it's just his whole pontificate. You could look at his whole pontificate as a whole effort to make peace in the world. And he did it in various ways. I was thinking of, he visited Hiroshima, and I think it was the late 90s. And met there with the survivors of the atomic bomb. And I remember going there myself on pilgrimage, and what a moving thing it is to meet, see that situation, the results of the nuclear weapon. And then there's the group, people called Hibachi. Hibachi are the survivors of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima, and who are great peacemakers. Mm. So they became like hero figures to Pope Francis, the Hibachi, because they aren't out for revenge or anything. They're out to stop, to stand up for peacemaking. And it was at that time, when he was in Hiroshima, that he started to talk about the dangers of atomic weapons and how we have. He even went so far as to say the possession of nuclear weapons is wrong, immoral. So we had the doctrine of defense, if mutual assured defense. We called it MAD, right? And the whole idea was if countries had nuclear weapons, it would keep us from going to war, because each side would know if we launched strikes, then it was retaliation and we'd be dead. So MAD, they called it. And that's what Pope Francis thought. It was madness. And he says, we can't, that isn't a good way to do it, he said. It's too dangerous, for one thing. There could be mistakes. I was with Mikhail Gorbachev on occasion talking about this, and Gorbachev talked about one of the times when they thought we had launched attacks, and their radar picked it up badly. And the world actually came that close. This is Gorbachev talking. Mm-hmm. Actually came that close to having a nuclear holocaust. And so for him, it was shows the great danger of this MAD strategy, mutual assured destruction. And Francis very much saw it that way. And so he said that what we needed to do was to work on treaties to limit our nuclear weapons and eventually to get rid of them entirely, because he claimed morally it was morally wrong just to have them, because they were so dangerous. And I mean, we're looking at the future of the human race, right? We have enough weapons to wipe us all out, wipe out civilization, wipe out the world, wipe out humanity. So he felt strong, and he said it was at Hiroshima then that he made those statements about we must get rid of atomic weaponry, and we must, even the possession of it, he said, is morally wrong. That's a statement that in the real world of politics doesn't really cut it, you know. I mean, it does make a moral statement, though.
I think even with further, and when he criticized nations that would sell lethal arms,
and
paraphrasing something to this, that why are we selling these arms, and they're just going to kill people and create all kinds of mayhem?
Why don't we help them develop and educate their kids, and why don't we help them to have good financial humanitarian development? Yeah, I think, as you said, we get rid of the nuclear weapons and the money you save, he said, what we want to do is invest it in the next generation, invest it in human rights and creating a more just world.
He was also very much, when there were conflicts, which are all around the world, just advocating dialogue.
Yep.
Instead of bombing each other.
Yep, dialogue. And he made that famous statement about when he saw all the violence around the world, he said, we're fighting World War III piecemeal. That's a statement that stuck with me, and I often repeat, we're fighting the Third World War one piece, one country at a time, one conflict at a time, fighting it piecemeal. But it's still, the world is not living in harmony as we should be.
And I think let me have your reaction to this. there's something, a couple of things about Pope Francis's background that maybe gives an insight into the peacemaking. And one of them was when he was growing up, his own family wasn't perfect. And there was conflict
right.
in the family, bickering. He used the term bickering.
Yes.
And that was really disturbing to him.
Yeah.
So that was a personal level. A second one.
That's common for him to use his own personal experience to make comments or to adopt positions. So influenced by his upbringing that way and by what went on in Argentina and so on.
And that would be the second one, the dirty war, as he called it, and it was called the oppression of the people,
yeah.
and he experienced that.
Yes.
And how wrong he felt that was.
Yeah, and it was horrible situations, yeah, that he lived through.
And then the last one is, you know, he was a Jesuit, he had Jesuit training, and he admired or looked up to Ignatius of Loyola.
Yeah.
Who was a peacemaker.
Yes, good point, very good point. So what we've got in Pope Francis is we've gotten the first Latin American pope, and he was very influenced by liberation theology, very influenced by Gustavo Gutierrez, and whose liberation theology looked for ways to bring people into dialogue and into communion, to work together, to fight social sin, which produced false consciousness. So he felt the world was in false consciousness on war, like we just accept as normal. Of course, these nations are fighting. So we end up with false consciousness. Yeah. War, that's normalization of war, of violence. And so he was very much against that.
I think the other interesting part of his background, at some point, he was a bouncer in a bar,
yes,
which is kind of an interesting, that's a peacemaker with an edge, I guess, right?
That's great.
I find that as just a very interesting.
That's a great point. Peacemaker with an edge. Yeah, but he did serve that. A lot of people look at that and say, well, he knew something of the real world.
Yes.
That was always with us clerics. It's we're out of touch. We don't know what the real world is like. Don't know what ordinary people are facing. And he helped present another image, an image of a pope who knew what was going on, right. who knew the conflicts and so on. And then the Jesuit part about discerning, I've lived with Jesuits in New York at Fordham and in England at Oxford, and they are so taken by the spiritual exercises. That's how they grow up. That's how they are formed. And they know, they just have the spiritual exercises of Ignatius in their bones and blood. And part of that is discernment. So we try to get into a prayerful state, put ourselves in tune with God's will, and then we try to see how God might speak to us and how he might have a message for us. It's, discernment. And he practiced that. I mean, he often didn't know exactly where he wanted to go or what he wanted to do, but he had instincts and was willing to pray about it and to do this discernment.
Right.
That is, weigh options in while one is in a prayerful state. How does the Holy Spirit speak to me? And I think a lot of his comments are along that line. Who am I to judge? One of his favorite statements. It's a lot of times when people read him, they think, well, what's this? Or he'll make comments on a plane flying back from Hiroshima. And so you don't look at Francis for clear doctrinal statements. You look at him for pastoral advice and guidance. And he wanted to get the world to see this. And he acted on things. I mean, I think that's important to see. when the Russians invaded Ukraine. He went to the Russian embassy and pretty outspoken was saying, you know, challenged, you can't do this. No, he just was right in there with a powerful kind of statement. I'm remembering another thing that was south, another event was reminded me of that is he was dealing with South Sudan, and there was a rebel group in South Sudan, and they were fighting one another. And he called them to Rome to a meeting. He put them in a room, the Sudan leader, president, premier, I guess it was, and some of the rebels who were fighting against him, sat them down, told them that they had to find a way to get together, that this was crazy and shouldn't do this. And at that point, he got down on his knees. They were sitting in a circle. He got down on his knees, and he moved from one to the other and kissed their feet, went around the circle kissing their feet, as if to say, look, you know. So he was big on gestures like that. Kissing feet seemed to be big to him as a way of showing respect to somebody else. Or in this case, I felt it was to make a moral point. I'm trying to be your servant. I'm trying to reconcile you. I want you guys to get along and stop killing one another. So he went around the whole circle, kissed each person's feet. I mean, it's quite a remarkable gesture. But he was big on that. Yeah. What else?
He was also involved with the Middle East, Cuba. Just about any time there was a high-profile conflict, he inserted himself.
Oh, yeah. Remind me of that. I hadn't thought about that for a while.
Well, I think it was 2014. It was the Middle East where he got the leaders together and had meetings.
Yeah.
And he had the courage to enter into conflicts that have been going on for centuries, right?
Yep.
But he still advocated for dialogue versus killing.
Yep.
And he also made the point of when you don't have to be, doesn't have to be winners or losers.
Yep.
It was an interesting concept that if you don't, it doesn't have to be, even though you disagree, you might even dislike each other, but you can still sit down and try to live side by side.
Yeah, don't see it as a conflictual situation. No, that's not the word, but it is a competitive situation where there's winners and losers. Yes, that's great. I'm glad you brought that up, Brad.
Very aspirational and very difficult in a war-torn world, right?
Right. And that's aspirational for sure. And that would be people writing him off, therefore, as being unrealistic,
sure, right,
and not knowing what's going on. And yet he felt that, I think he was convinced that his Christian faith guided him. So he talked a lot about this, Christ is the peacemaker. So Christ said, put away the sword. You take up the sword, you're going to perish by the sword. You know, that's a famous scene when they come to arrest him and Peter takes out his sword and cuts off the ear of the high priest servant. And the reaction of Christ is, don't do that. Yeah. You know, that's not the way I'm not going to be violent. So it was like the people like Francis of Assisi, who took Christ seriously, would say, nobody's going to make me violent. I was thinking of Martin Luther King that way, when they firebombed his house. And Martin Luther King said, nobody will pull me down to the level of violence. Mm. And I think that Francis actually cited Gandhi on occasion and Martin Luther King as examples of peacemaking that really works. And I mean, there's a good point to be made,
right.
You know. Gandhi helped free India through nonviolence. There's a article I asked you to read. I don't know if you got around to it or not. It's by John Deere, peace activist, Catholic, was a Jesuit, left the order, still a priest, D-E-A-R, big on nonviolence, nonviolent approaches. And that's how he sees Frank John Deere, still alive, peace activist, still a Catholic, still a priest, but not a Jesuit. And says that Pope Francis is a model of nonviolence. And that that Pope Francis felt that nonviolence was a way of life. So Christ said, put away the sword. You know, you're going to take up the sword, you're going to die by the sword. So Jesus was a peacemaker in his own setting. And that we're called as Christians today to do that. And John Deere wrote an article about Pope Francis saying he was a peacemaker and he was a proponent of nonviolence. So he sort of picked up the cause of Gandhi and Martin Luther King and people who showed that nonviolence could work. You know, so with civil rights movement in the United States, sit-ins and all that, not violent, but actions that would bring to the consciousness of people the problems of racism in our country. John Lewis, I think of him as an example of that kind of thing. And I remember a friend of mine was with Martin Luther King when they did the Selma March. And he was so taken with how Dr. King was convinced, you are not going to be violent. If we get violent, I'm going to call this off. We're not going to do it if it's going to cause violence. So John Deere is praising Pope Francis for adopting that same sort of outlook. Yeah.
Is there a way that we can pivot to the macro lessons of Pope Francis to our everyday life? Because obviously we have conflict in our own life.
Sure. Yeah, I do think, and it's not just him recalling Christ, and so Christ would be a model for marital couples, right? So there's a time to say, I'm sorry, or there's a time to say, let's make up. Let's not carry this through to tomorrow, or not. Let's not inflict our problems on our kids. You know, there's all kind of ways in which, and we should think of priests today in our world calling for that. We have so much violence. Yeah, we have the violence of authoritarianism and so on, and we have to avoid that kind of violence or counter it or put up barriers so it doesn't take us over. So in our world, we're aware of it so much. I mean, every day there's a school shooting or there's something going on in the world where there's anti-Semitism raised its ugly head. It's all around us. It's like a plague, and we need to resist it. We can't fall into losing hope about it. I think Francis once said that to lose hope is suicidal. To lose hope is suicidal. That's Francis, and then there's no way out. So I think that parishes should have groups that get along and collaborate for the good of the parish. No, families should find a way to do that. So many families have some offspring that's not in total tune with what the family usually likes to see as our norms. And so how do we got to be, find a way to walk with that person who seems to be out of the norm? Walk with them. They don't need to be beaten down or, there's a lot of different ways of dealing with it. They might have to have tough love. and so on. But anyway, our goal is to try to bring a real community. See, that's it. Fratelli Tutti was all about for fraternity. We need fraternity and social friendship, and we need it at every level. We need it at the personal level. So somebody at work rubs you the wrong way, and you can hold a grudge forever or make life miserable or create a workspace that is really not very hospitable to everybody. Or we could try to make up and reconcile with that person so the workspace works better. Parishes should can do more along this line, I think. And then we think of our country, United States, powerful, affluent country. I know that what Pope Francis would want us to do is be part of disarmament talks or reducing nuclear weapons or getting rid of the MAD, mutual assured destruction strategy, you know. So he wants us at all levels to work together. Yeah, that Ukraine war, Russian invasion of Ukraine bugged him no end. He reacted strongly and viscerally and so on.
Well, he's obviously this whole season we've talked about Pope Francis, and it seems like peacemaking is a good way to kind of do an exclamation point to his impact. Is there anything you want to summative say about Pope Francis as we close out?
No, I love Pope Francis. I think he was right on target with trying to make Vatican II real. I think he had a special message for us in the United States. And I like to raise him up as an example. He's so quotable very often. Who am I to judge? As a way of thinking about how do we relate to the LGBTQ community. I love this idea of walking with people, you know, of someone who's living a tough life and on the streets or whatever, of just being present, sort of a ministry of presence. But he modeled it in every way. His first comes out, never forget, I was watching it on television. He walks out on the balcony. I was with a good friend of mine watching it, and he walks out and says, would you pray for me? I mean, it's such a change in clerical, you know, it's always the priest is going to lead, the priest is going to do this. I often find myself doing it when I go to lunch with someone. I say, do you want to lead the prayer or you want me to lead it? Whichever way is fine. But it's learning from Francis. Would you bow your head and say a prayer for me? So it created a mood. Simplicity of life. He lives in simple surroundings, doesn't wear all the fancy vestments and garb and so on. To me, he's another Francis of Assisi. Choosing that name was just, you know, such a brilliant move. And we come back today, Francis of Assisi was a peacemaker, courageously so. And our Pope Francis, and just to say, I think he's with us for a longer time because Pope Leo XIV, his successor, has said he wants to follow in along the lines of Francis. And so that's a way of thinking how Francis's legacy is going to get continued.
Thank you, Father Mason.